Thank you. Members know we're starting? Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3099. This is the second time we have opened for public testimony on this bill. We had quite an active commentary from members of the public on Tuesday, but we wanted to have additional opportunity for people to give us their ideas and suggestions, concerns, and support for this bill, and I'm sure we will hear a lot of all of that. Because we expect to have quite a few people interested in testifying, I am going to limit testimony to 2 minutes each. The committee welcomes and encourages citizens and people with interest in this bill to submit written testimony as well. That will all be part of our record. It will all be reviewed by members of the committee before we vote on this bill or any amendments to this bill. I would also like both members of the committee and the public to know that after today's hearing, it would be my intention to ask Representative Clem, who had worked on this extensively during the interim and who sponsored this bill, to chair an informal work group to develop an amendment to this bill. I expect we will want to amend the bill. I know we've heard some testimony already that inclines us to want to make some amendments, and we want to hear what people would suggest. And other members of the committee, I've also asked Vice Chair Esquivel if he, in his busy schedule, could be available, and he has said that he would be interested in working as well on that. So please let me, as well as Representative Clem, who's going to chair that informal work group, know of your ideas. And members of the committee, if you are interested in working with us on that, please let me know, and we will try to accommodate that as long as we don't have quorum issues. I will call people to testify in groups of three. Ms. Ross will provide assistance to you to manage your time. She'll time everyone and give you a little bit of a 30-second warning so that you can start wrapping up. And with that, Representative Clem, you wanted to bring one item to people's attention before we get started.
I think I may be able to lighten your list, potentially, actually.
Okay.
The bill is misdrafted on one issue, as far as I know. There is a section on page 2, lines 27 through 29, that deletes an exemption for breeding, kenneling, and training of greyhounds that are in a particular county, and there had to be a racetrack in that county. This was Multnomah County. This was put in 1985. It's been 24 years. Nobody ever built no one's used the exemption. So that is deleted in the bill. Then inadvertently, when consolidating under dog kennels that they are in fact allowed on EFU, somebody accidentally put in unless they're greyhounds. And I have no problem with greyhounds at all. So that's an error. And this is on page 6. So it says dog kennels, this is line 15, basically are allowed other than kennels used for the breeding, kenneling, and training of greyhounds for racing. And that's inadvertent. It should really just say dog kennels are allowed. But there's some people with greyhound kennels who were pretty alarmed about why they couldn't have their kennels, and other dog breeders with kennels of other dogs could. So that'll be an amendment forthcoming.
That'll probably be something that you'll want to work
in the work group.
Yeah.
That's my intention, at least, to have an amendment that clarifies that.
Representative Wingert?
I just want to make sure that Representative Clem is sure about that. If he has some breed-specific legislation that he'd like to move, I have a few hundred emails that have come my way that I would be happy to let them know about your intention to have some breed-specific legislation. You just let me know.
Only if it were to allow Weimaraners back in the Capitol, because I know Gary Harris is probably here. He's got one. I've got one. But that's not happening, I don't think.
There
would be
one
vetoed.
Member of the committee who voted for that.
Thank you.
Okay.
So did I.
Thanks. We have quite a few people with a variety of interests today, so let's get started on our testimony. Bob Horning, Dean Freeborn, and then I've got three folks who signed up together. I think I'll bring you up as a panel. I will bring Gary Johnson up separately. So Bob Horning, Dean Freeborn, and Gary Johnson. On deck, we'll have Steve Wildish, Steve Pfeiffer, and Bob Short. When you testify to it, we welcome, as I said, your written testimony, but because we're making an oral recording of today's proceedings, if you would start by identifying yourself by name and either county of residence or the organization you are here speaking on behalf of. Mr. Horning.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bob Horning. I'm from Horning's Hideout, Private Park, West Portland, about 25 miles up Washington County. Being a park owner, I'm familiar with land use and park issues and everything else. A couple weeks ago, I came here to testify against another bill, Senate Bill 25, just because it swung one way to really hard until they had an amendment to it. Now I'm down here because, well, we're going the other way. This bill, I believe, is poorly written for an interest group who wants things their way, period. This bill eliminates many uses available to landowners, sets up Oregon for issues with Measure 37, past Hoover rulings, the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, and does not confront the reality of the aging population of farmers. This bill makes it much harder to locate a school in their communities. Now they have to go through 215, 296. The average age of Oregon farmers is 57.5 years old. In 20 years, they will lose 50%. We will lose 50% of our capacity to farm a family farm. This bill discourages younger families from farming by taking away the availability of schools. At this rate, a few dozen years, most of Oregon farms will be owned by corporations. Corporations very possibly owned by other countries, such as China. That is reality, and that's happening other places. This bill is terrible for future demographics of our farms. This also tries to define what a park is. Liberal ruling Spearing versus Yamhill County has already done this. Basically, it reads that a park has whatever use as defined in both dictionary zoning codes and definitions of those zoning codes. That's why I have a park. Able to have a park. If you define the park as narrowly as it is right now, you will have to define public other public parks, Waterfront Park in Portland, and everything else as the same way. Because if you don't, you will have a lawsuit underneath your hands. I can guarantee it from the because it's interstate commerce you're dealing with here. You know, you're dealing with concerts, you're dealing with weddings, you're dealing with all this stuff. And Sherman Act prevents monopolies, which the state would become a monopoly. Well, I guess my time's up. So,
if you have written testimony,
I do, and everything else. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Freeborn.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. I don't have anything prepared, but I just wanted to come in this afternoon and give my opinion.
Freeborn, would you give us your name?
Oh, Dean Freeborn. I'm sorry. I'm Dean Freeborn. I farm about 10 miles west here in Rickrail.
Okay.
The first one specific is the gravel issue, aggregate issue on farmland. I see there's one being proposed in Polk County right now, and it's on some of the best farmland in the Willamette Valley. There's absolutely no reason for doing this or allowing this. And so, you know, there isn't a lot more I can say about it. I mean, it's right in the heart of, those, like I say, some of the best ground in Polk County. The other issue that's along with that is it's a valuable resource, the water that's coming from that area. There's a domestic, not domestic, but a source for wells that serves a large community of users out there. I can't give you the exact number, but it's located not very far away from where they're wanting to dig this gravel pit. And if there's any chance that it could hurt that water source for that community, Rickrail Water Association, there's things that that intertwine there, and not only, like I say, destroying the farm ground, you got a possibility of ruining some a source for a water for a community too. I think this also has something about some wetlands provision in there. Is that right, Representative Clem? That I think when some of those are being placed, that there should be some input from neighbors too, from the standpoint of it can affect what we're doing and how we're farming and the wildlife that it brings in and a lot of other things, and the way that they change their waters. So I just there's problems out there that need to be addressed, and I think this is might not be perfect. Sounds like some amendments are coming, but I think it's something that needs to be done. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Okay, I'm Gary Johnson. I'm the second vice president of Oregon Farm Bureau. And this came in front of you from Oregon Farm Bureau because of Representative Clem. And the aggregate issue has been an ongoing problem that we've been dealing with for many, many years. And I sat for 16 years on the County Planning Commission in Yamhill County, and I've watched the aggregate business come in and put in their cells and dewatering and causing more problems, because I know of one, they're not the communication between the GAMI and Water Resource Department, and one of the dairies lost one of his wells for irrigation, but it was taken care of by the aggregate business, but they didn't bother to help him or do anything about water right transfers and all the things. So he could be in jeopardy of losing his water rights because of this. When those cells are done and they fill back up with water, then he would have to refile for water rights. So every action has a counter-reaction, and whatever we do on these things, and we got to be very careful what we do, and this is very important, because you have other sources to, there's rock being moved up and down the Columbia in different directions. So to me, we can take care of it in other ways. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Gentlemen, thank you. Mr. Wildish, Mr. Pfeiffer, and Mr. Short, please. On deck, Kirk Schaefer, Tim Wood, and Bob Wright.
Madam Chair, before we begin, Mr. Pfeiffer, I know he's in the building on another issue. I'm hoping he can be here, but he's not here at the moment. We are very eager to hear his testimony because he was a member of the Land Conservation and Development Commission at the time the 96 agreement was made. So
I know several people in the building, including members of this committee and other legislators, are testifying on different bills because hearings are happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. We'll entertain him when he comes back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So who wants to start?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'm Stephen Wildish. I do have written testimony.
Great. Thanks. Mr. Hoyt will take it. Thanks.
My written testimony was designed for about 4 minutes, and so I will modify what I plan to say and try to hit the highlights. I'm vice president and one of the family owners of Wildish Sand and Gravel Company. I'm also here today testifying as a member of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. We are concerned with the House Bill 3099's treatment of sand and gravel resources, most notably those located in the Willamette Valley. Some of the things you hear about our industry, we just heard some of the concerns here a few minutes ago. I can tell you we are one of the most highly regulated industries in our state. We are responsible when it comes to water and our neighbors, and the regulations are in place to make sure that we operate responsibly, and we know we do, and our door is always open for those to come see what we do, because most people don't get a chance to do that. Getting to this particular legislation It's our opinion that it's designed to place a ban on future sand and gravel mining in the aggregate-rich lowland areas of Willamette Valley, without question. There are a lot of reasons why it makes sense to mine deep sand and gravel deposits located in the urban centers. It is the most cost-efficient, less equipment and power is needed. It is the best product available. It is located near where the need is. In conclusion, I want to ask the committee one thing. If those that promote this bill do so because of sand and gravel consumption of farmland, I ask them to look at studies that show that we take a negligible portion of high-value farmland, and in Lane County, only 20% of all farmland is harvested today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Short.
Madam Chair, I'm Bob Short. I am the Public Affairs Manager of CalPro & Company, formerly known as Glacier Northwest. We are the largest sand, gravel, cement, and concrete supplier in the Pacific Northwest. Our market in Oregon is largely in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm also the chair of the Legislative Committee for OCAPA. And I just kind of want to review the bidding here for just a couple minutes on some of the points that have been made. One, it's imperative in this state that we use the highest quality aggregate available in order to promote the longevity of the public infrastructure that that aggregate is a critical part of, both public and private. It is important because of transportation costs that we site aggregate close to the market. Aggregate is both heavy and cheap. The farther you get away from the market, the increase in cost goes up dramatically. I believe the figure in the Jager report is 22 cents a ton mile. So there is a positive public benefit to keeping the supply of aggregate close to the market. As it happens in Oregon, the market is in the Willamette Valley. The best rock is in the Willamette Valley. Moving the source of supply gradually away from both the market and the highest quality material will have an enormous public cost over time. Some of the key statistics which were mentioned yesterday, over the next 50 years in the Willamette Valley, we're expected to consume 9,800 acres of EFU land out of a total of almost 2 million. Between 1993 and 2004, there were 400 acres of aggregate permitted in Marion County on farmland. During that same period, 4,000 acres were permitted for churches, houses, and schools. So we're not the problem. So that concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Thanks. Sam Flem?
I just wanted to ask Mr. Wildish a question. Because you, even though I think, you know, when you refer to those who brought the bill, I'm the sponsor.
Okay.
So I can assure you it's not to ban it, but you have some other things I really agree with you in here. I'm wondering if you would be willing to serve on this work group I'm chairing with me. I don't know your schedule or your time, but, I mean, it would be helpful because we are going to be looking at the language and what the issues are, and I wonder if you might be able to do that.
I'd be very happy to talk about that and perhaps be available for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, I also have
if you have written testimony.
Yeah, I have written testimony that addresses the alternatives issue.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. And when Mr. Pfeiffer arrives, give me a signal or I'll put him on the next panel. Mr. Schaefer, Mr. Wood, Mr. Wright. Then let's have on deck Amanda Rich, Bruce Ronning, and Holly Sears. Mr. Schaefer, how do you do?
Hello, thank you. I'm Kirk Schaefer from Clackamas County, and I spoke with Representative Clem, and he gave us the clarification, so I'm going to leave my written testimony and not take up any more time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wood?
Thank you. I'm Tim Wood, the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and the purpose of my testimony today is to offer my objections to the provisions in House Bill 3099 that would effectively eliminate the acquisition of properties and restrict development of public parks on high-value farmland and exclusive farm use zones. Oregon State Parks is in the business of protecting and sharing special places of natural, scenic, and cultural significance. In essence, protecting and sharing Oregon's heritage with the current and future generations, not the least of which is Oregon's agricultural heritage. These special places exist on every type of land across the state, including exclusive farm use land. Had these provisions been in existence previously, Oregon would very likely not have today such iconic parks, many of which are connected to the state's agricultural heritage, as Champuy, Willamette Mission, Thompson's Mills, Bowers Rock, Sarah Helmick, and the numerous properties that have been acquired along the Willamette Greenway. Provisions of this bill could very well affect the ability to provide the infrastructure to meet future needs at existing parks, as well as preclude acquisition of such valuable properties in the future. The impact of state parks on high-value farmland is proportionally very small, perhaps as low as 1/4 of 1% of the state's total. State parks have coexisted with agriculture for many years, and some agricultural lands in state parks are kept in agricultural production. State park lands are chosen for their natural, cultural, and scenic resource features that fit the department's mission and role, and coupled with their availability, park properties are purchased only from willing sellers. Planning and development of these properties are governed by other land use provisions, such as adoption of park master plans into comprehensive plans or, when applicable, conditional use. To my knowledge, public park providers weren't participants in the discussions that led to this bill. My department and likely other park and recreation providers that you will hear from around the state would welcome the opportunity to better understand the issues that this bill is attempting to address and be given the opportunity to continue to resolve them within existing land use guidelines and state rule governing park planning and local jurisdictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Mr. Wright.
My name is Bobby Wright. I'm from Douglas County. I'm a farmer and an orchardist. That's it. Nothing major. However, on this bill, to me, the big thing is that as valuable as these people think the ground is in Willamette Valley, Douglas County has less than 1% of its valuable and prime farm ground on EFU. Okay, so my thinking is that in the mid-60s when they started the EFU, the E for exclusive, we probably shouldn't be here today, because there are so many exceptions. Okay, to review an exception to me seems like the most reasonable and sensible thing to do. Our federal government is spending money like crazy. But it's only money. Our kids will have to repay it. That's okay. It's just money. But when you spend farm ground, that's not replaceable. So a review process seems like to me to be a very reasonable ordeal to go through, because the issues are simply not all black or white. Everything is an individual case that needs to be looked at by the people who are going to spend it. That's it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your taking the time to come up and talk to us. Ms. Rich, Mr. Ronning, and Ms. Sears. And then let's have on deck Vaughn Neely, Dave Benashi, and Catherine Culla. Ms. Rich.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Nolan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. And we represent city, county, district, regional, and state parks throughout Oregon and the professionals that serve those agencies. appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about our concerns with 3099, but before I start on what our problems with it are, I want to commend Representative Clem and his work group, actually, for their efforts at protecting resource land, because I really do think we're on the same team here in terms of trying to protect our precious natural resources for a healthy and vital future for all Oregonians. But we do believe that this bill, in prohibiting or the use of high-value farmland for the establishment of parks, represents a pretty fundamental shift in the values that we are trying to reflect in our land use policy here. Currently, parks are allowed under a conditional use, and this would essentially, in many parts of the state, eradicate that conditional use and place us only being able to put a park under the exceptions process, which you've heard testimony before is very difficult and time-consuming. So I just wanted really to, with my testimony today, to emphasize that to the extent that our statutes reflect our values, I think that it is safe to say that it is a fiercely held value of all Oregonians that we provide access to nature, that we provide opportunities for people to connect and to get outside, to actively recreate, and to lead healthy lifestyles. And I think it's particularly in these times that we're facing in terms of rising childhood obesity, it's important that we continue to preserve those lands where folks can do that. We respectfully would request that the committee remove the language prohibiting the establishment of parks on high-value farmland, but we absolutely stand ready to sit on the work group and help come up with what may be a better balance if you feel the need for a different balance reflected in the statute.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Ronning?
Good afternoon, Chair Nolan and committee members. My name is Bruce Ronning. I'm the Director of Planning and Development at the Bend Metro Park and Recreation District in Bend. The district appreciates this opportunity to share our concerns regarding House Bill 3099, and we're joining Oregon Recreation Parks Association, the Oregon Parks Recreation Department, and other local park and recreation agencies across the state in our opposition to the bill as it's currently written. And particularly our issue is that it would prohibit community park development on high-value farmland. By doing so, the bill would unnecessarily restrict park agencies like the Bend Park and Recreation District from providing the future park and recreation services that their communities demand. House Bill 3099 could make it extremely difficult to develop three park sites that the Park and Recreation District currently owns, located on EFU lands. We currently own a total of 1,079 acres. I transposed those digits in my typing on EFU lands, and some of which are considered as high value in Deschutes County, and I'm going to come back to that point. The district acquired these lands for the purposes of providing typical community park amenities, including sport fields, hiking trails, picnic grounds, natural areas, and to meet the needs of a very rapidly growing community in Deschutes County. The same rapid growth has made it impractical, if not impossible, to acquire large parcels within the urban growth boundary in order to meet that need. In addition to restricting the use of the property that BMPRD currently owns, House Bill 3099 will severely restrict our opportunities to seek suitable additional community park land as the community grows. History has shown that high-value farmland designation in Deschutes County lands is likely based solely on the assignment of irrigation rights and has never been through a soils test or been tested against soil standards. And most of that land, even if it's valued as high value, that is not a good indicator of the land's ability to produce crops or to support livestock. And in fact, much of what is designated as high-value farmland in Deschutes County is not comparable to high-value farmlands elsewhere in the state, and particularly in the Willamette Valley. So, in conclusion, House Bill 3099 proposes a one-size-fits-all solution to a problem that may exist in parts of the state but does not exist in Deschutes County. Land use amendments contained in H. Bill 3099 will unreasonably constrain our park and recreation district and civil agencies across the state in acquiring and developing large park sites. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate hearing the perspective from Bend.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, also known as ORA. ORA is a statewide trade association representing private solid waste management companies in Oregon. ORA members collect and process most of Oregon's curbside and residential and curbside garbage and recyclables, as well as operate material recovery facilities and many of Oregon's solid waste transfer stations and landfills. ORA members take their role of protecting the environment very seriously. Most recently, ORA participated in efforts to bring e-waste recycling to Oregon communities, and ORA members are always looking at ways to shrink their environmental footprint in the communities they serve by switching to biodiesel, retrofitting truck engines to reduce diesel particulate emissions, and contemplating ways to implement sustainable practices in this industry in their communities throughout Oregon. ORA is opposed to House Bill 3099 because it paints a grim picture for the future of landfills and other disposal sites in Oregon. All Oregonians generate waste, and landfills are necessary tools in the safe management of those wastes. Today, we have technology to build safe landfills, complete with high-tech lining systems, advanced technologies to collect and remove leachate and gas, and ultra-sophisticated systems to monitor long-term environmental performance. Several Oregon landfills have installed landfill gas-to-energy facilities that capture the methane released from the landfill and use it to produce electricity to power homes and surrounding areas. The nature of Subtitle D landfill regulation has led to a system of larger regional landfills, which would be impossible to site within urban growth boundaries or other areas, with smaller parcels and greater potential conflicts with the urban density development. I would just like to note in the last few seconds that I have that this bill would apply to all solid waste disposal facilities, which include landfills, transfer stations, MRFs, energy recovery facilities, compost facilities, and recycling facilities. The conditional use process currently in statute already contains express provisions to protect farmland and farm practices from this. So we urge the committee to reconsider the effect that this bill will have on properly permitted and safe disposal sites in Oregon, and ORA would be willing to participate in further discussions about this issue. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks much.
Group.
Ms. Neely, Mr. Vanashi, and Ms. Culla. On deck, Casey Culla, Leslie Blanding, and Mike Califf. Ms. Neely?
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fawn McNeely, and I'm representing Waste Management. Waste Management is concerned that House Bill 3099 will not allow for the expansion of our existing landfills or for the siting of new landfills on EFU land. We're specifically concerned about the Columbia Ridge landfill that we operate in Gillam County on EFU land. Waste Management purchased nearly 10,000 acres to ensure the ability to expand for decades to come. That decision was and is supported by the local community and was a huge investment for Waste Management. The siting of landfills in Oregon is based on a rigorous process, including substantial public input. Although Waste Management and Oregonians are dedicated to reducing solid waste materials, there may be the need to expand or site additional landfills in Oregon. Currently, new landfills are allowed only on low-value EFU lands through the conditional use permit issued by local jurisdictions. Landfill expansions are allowed on high-value farmland through the conditional use permit process as well. This bill would remove both of those scenarios, and the only way landfills could be sited or expanded on EFU land would be through the exceptions process, which has been stated before is very difficult. The conditional use process currently in statute contains provisions to protect farmland and farm practices. The nature of Subtitle D has led to a system of larger regional landfills, which would be impossible to site within urban growth boundaries or areas with smaller parcels and greater potential conflicts with urban density development. We're concerned House Bill 3099 is too restrictive and may greatly limit our ability to site landfills in areas that make sense for the environment and for the state. For these reasons, we ask that if you plan to pass this legislation, you amend the bill to add back the language that has been removed in relation to solid waste facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Vanashi.
Chairperson Nolan and committee members, my name is Dave Van Ash. I reside at 36130 Northwest Wren Road, Cornelius, Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My wife and I own and operate 700 acres in Washington County, for Century Farm, 1896. And I'm here today not because of money. I'm here because of my farm. I came here today as a 60-year resident of Washington County who owns and operates a 2,000-acre commercial family farm of grass seed, legume seed, and grains in north of Cornelius, Oregon. I'm on the board of directors of Washington County Farm Bureau, and I have and continue to serve on numerous other agricultural boards and commissions, as well as being a member of the current Metro Urban Reserve Coordinating Committee. Agriculture in Washington County faces the same issues as other populated agricultural counties in Oregon, but the most important issue in Washington County is land use. Because of Senate Bill 100, Washington County has a strong and vibrant agricultural economy, rated number 4 in Oregon with agricultural sales in 2007 of $351 million. Today we're here to discuss non-farm ag issues in the EFU zone. I've attached my written testimony a copy of a letter I received last summer, which sums up many of the conflicts farmers deal with when non-farm uses such as homes are allowed in the EFU zone. Measure 37, 49, water lines, gas lines, golf courses, parks, commuter highways, and urban growth expansions are a few of the conflicts I've personally been involved in during my 32-year career in agriculture. All of these non-farm uses and others just provide more conflicts in the EFU zone for farmers. This bill's purpose is to help reduce the potential new and expanding conflicts in the EFU zone. During harvest and tillage season, my farm creates massive amounts of dust and noise. We create odors by using biosolids applied on our farm, and we have a very difficult time moving farm equipment on rural roads with commuter traffic. Yet we do these practices in the EFU zone, which is a farmer's industrial zone and has been designated as such by Oregon law. Washington County has lost over 50% of her ag base since 1960, yet we are still number 4 in ag production in Oregon. We appear to be recession-proof. Our land base and farm infrastructure is at a point of critical mass. It's time to address the non-farm issues in the EFU zone if we are to remain a viable agricultural county.
Can you wrap it up, please?
My son graduates from Oregon State University with a degree in ag next spring. He plans on returning to the family farm. The letter of conflict from the non-farm neighbor, which I have enclosed, begs the question, where does my family go to farm without non-farm conflicts? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Catherine Kula, and I farm and live in Yamhill County, actually just north of here on Grand Island, a well-known spot. I support House Bill 3099, and I'm not being paid to be here, and I'm here of my own free will, and all I have to share with you today is my story. My husband, Casey, who's going to share too, we're first-generation farmers, and we're young. I'm 28, for the record. Our small family farm grows certified organic vegetables, which we distribute to the greater McMinnville area through our community-supported agriculture program. We actually moved to Oregon from Washington State in 2006, and I think this is critical for you to hear today. We've lived in Washington for many years and trained on another farm there. We loved it there. But we came to Oregon specifically because of opportunities for farmers created by land use laws, such as EFU zoning. As young farmers starting out, our ability to find land to lease or buy was directly related to the simple fact of farmland continuing to exist. Quite simply, the more farmland that exists, the more possible opportunities for young farmers to farm. And for also existing farmers to expand. Likewise, each time an EFU parcel is converted to non-farm uses, future opportunities disappear forever. In Oregon, the good news is my husband and I found success and opportunity. We found land to lease, on which we set up our farm business in 2006, and eventually we found land to buy. We now own 17 acres of farmland, again just north of here on Grand Island. Though small, right, in scale, significantly smaller, our farm manages to support our family's livelihood, and we produce enough vegetables to feed 120 local households for 45 weeks of the year. Real, productive, living, farmable topsoil is a precious resource that cannot be recreated. As a state community, we need to preserve high-value farmland today for viability tomorrow and into the future. I support continued strengthening of EFU zoning, particularly House Bill 3099 with a lot of its current material. Our story is just one in one time, but I hope that young farmers can continue to find opportunities in Oregon for many decades to come. Thank you for the work you've done and into the future.
And I just have to comment on the juxtaposition, which was rather serendipitous, of the two of you at the witness table. I think it tells quite a story.
I have a son that's 22. He'll be 23 when he returns.
Excellent. Thank you. Casey Kula, Leslie Blanding, and Mike Califf. And then on deck, Mr. Hoyt, do we have another sign up? Because I... Okay, on deck we'll have Larry Dyke, and has Mr. Pfeiffer returned? Okay. Mr. Kula.
Good afternoon. After hearing all the stuff, I'm really excited about the bill. So for the record, my name is Casey Kula. I live and farm at 18705 Southeast Upper Island Road, Dayton, Oregon, and I support House Bill 3099. As my wife Katie said, we're first-generation farmers, and we're full-time. And our farm is located on Grand Island, just north of here. It's a 4,000-acre river island in the middle of the Willamette. And we grow certified organic vegetables. She already said that. Just wanted to clarify. Grand Island, where we live and farm, is a unique example of Oregon's diverse farm economy. Farms of all kinds fill the island. It's a vibrant place. In the middle of the summer, everything grows wild there, including the weeds. People work there. Lots of people work there. And visitors come and they U-pick. As with many river islands, Grand Island is blessed with fertile, well-drained topsoil and abundant water. We just got new water rights, which is an amazing thing. First-generation farmers who get new water rights is pretty exciting. And as a farmer who's farmed at many sites in Oregon and Washington, I can safely say that Grand Island soil is some of the most productive I've ever seen or farmed on. Part of what makes our soil especially well-suited to farming is its subsoil. There's those layers of sand and gravel that just keep going. All the Missoula floods and Illinois floods. That allows water to drain away from our topsoil in all seasons, and it keeps our crops healthy. So as organic farmers, we can't spray pesticides, and we can't spray herbicides, and we don't use chemical fertilizers. So our soil needs to be very, very healthy and well-drained in order to have good crops. Unfortunately, the presence of the sand and gravel creates that attractiveness to aggregate companies. But topsoil is a complex living thing that will be simply taken out of production forever. One last point is that all the parcels on Grand Island are connected through hydrology because they all flood. So what happens on one parcel affects every other parcel upstream and downstream and the rest of the river. So think about that when land is extracted. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Leslie Blanding.
Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Blanding. I live and farm at 6100 Mineral Springs Road in Carlton in Yamhill County. I operate a small, diverse farm with my family between the cities of Lafayette and Carlton, both of which have been growing rapidly over the last few years. As these cities have grown and development has spread onto former EFU land, farmers in our area have noticed already existing water problems becoming worse. We lease our land along with another farmer who grows unirrigated hay crops and organic dairy cows. My parents and I, however, rely on a limited well to water our livestock, our vegetable garden, and for our own residential use. Last summer, for the first time in my experience, our water level dropped so that even our own residential use became threatened. I am concerned that non-farm uses of high-value farmland always carry the potential for serious depletion or contamination of water sources that are essential for agricultural purposes and also for the farmers who live in these rural areas. Water is an immediate concern for our farm and many others around the state. Therefore, I support the continued preservation of high-value farmland as presented in House Bill 3099. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Califf.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Califf. My wife and I operate a farm just north of Independence in Polk County. We have a proposed aggregate site immediately adjacent to our property, which gives us 4,000 feet of common border. So we're looking face-to-face with an industrial site immediately next to our farm, and there are so many consequences that we can't judge how severe or not severe they might not be. If I have a farm next door, I know what to expect. An industrial site is a completely different issue. So as a consequence of that, we have started to question what crops we raise, what the impacts are going to be on those crops, how much money do we invest even before this potential site may get approved. And so, in effect, we're having to make decisions before we know what all the rules of the game are and what all the possible implications are. It's a paralyzing situation to be in because it could have long-term consequences for the viability of our operation. You know, we don't know what the dust issues are going to be. We don't know what the emissions from a proposed asphalt batch plant are going to be. So, you know, as a result, we just continually question whether we're making the right or wrong decision. And I guess our position is that if you allow an aggregate mine on prime soils like that, you have a short-term gain and you have a hole in the ground. 100 years from now, that's going to be a hole in the ground. Where 100 years from now, if we leave our soils alone and protect them, they'll be continuing to produce as productive crops as they are right now. We feel that we have adequate aggregate resources in this valley on poorer soils that can fill our aggregate need, or at least the majority of them, and leave our prime soils alone to create food for our country and other countries around the world. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Dyke, and I have now John Chandler. And that's the extent of the people who've signed up. Is there anyone else in the audience who hasn't put your name on a list or whose list I've lost? Okay. After the testimony is concluded, I would like to ask the Department of Agriculture to come up and address some of the issues that have been raised so that we can have some clarity. Before we hand this off to our work group. Mr. Dyke.
For the record, my name is Larry Dyke, and I farm in Washington County. I raise cantata, blackberries, blueberries, grass seed, corn, and beets. Chairman Nolan and the committee members, first of all, I want to thank Representative Clem for trying to address the underlying conflicts in the exclusive farm use with this bill.
Thank you.
I support House Bill 3099. The bill will put in place review of impacts and compatibility that a use will have in an EFU zone. It should be a high standard to bring a non-farm use into the EFU zone. We as farmers are the food industry at the ground level, which means we need farm ground. I have farmed next to a state park, and it creates lots of problems. Trash, trespass, and theft are some of the experiences that I got to deal with. A metal thief used the state park as access to my cornfield to steal my aluminum irrigation pipe. State parks aren't neighbors. They are absentee landlords that I got to work around because they aren't on the ground daily to see that the impacts of the non-farm uses. If Metro wants to be a good neighbor, then they should support this bill. I spent a lot of time that could be used to farm working with Metro on land use issues. This bill does not impact their bonds to purchase farm ground or water or other land in the EFU zone. It just says, If you change the use from farming, you will need to go through an open public process and look at the impacts to the neighboring farms. Metro has changed the drainage on property that they purchased, which affected the neighbor's property. It is never about one willing seller, but about the remaining farmers that really want to produce food for Oregonians. It is about the critical mass and agriculture infrastructure, and at what cost it will be to Oregonians when farmers like myself don't show up at hearings like today to say protect our farm ground, and for me and the future generations of farmers and consumers. The other choice is just develop, import our food supply, and destroy the number two economic engine for Oregon. Shut down our farms, turn off the light switch, and move to another country or state. Farmers need this bill so that we can be good neighbors and have good neighbors instead of building fences. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here specifically with regard to the aggregate provisions of House Bill 3099. Obviously, my industry, if and when we get back to building, uses an awful lot of rock. We want to make sure we have an adequate supply. I would like to point out for the committee what I hope has been pointed out by others more expert in this category than I, that unlike the other uses that are discussed in the exceptions to various things in EFU zones, in particular the exceptions being addressed in this bill, aggregate has many of the same characteristics that good farmland does. Good farmland is what it is because of its location, its drainage, the soil type. Aggregate is where it is and is a valuable aggregate site because of the particular geographic and geologic specifications of the site. You can't relocate that any more than you can relocate good farm ground. It is different in character from campground or dog kennels or anything else. It needs to be treated differently and addressed differently, and the balancing, which is difficult. Aggregate and farming are very difficult to correlate to one another, but that needs to be treated differently than the other things in this bill. As such, I don't think it should be go forward with that language in it, simply because it doesn't make sense to me to say you can locate an aggregate site someplace where there isn't any aggregate, which is essentially what this bill would potentially say. That doesn't mean there isn't a big conflict there. It doesn't mean there isn't a big issue there. It does not mean I want to be on any work group you might put together on that. Thank you.
Count your blessings, Representative Clem.
I do understand the conflicts. In my previous life, I grew up farming. I currently live out in the country. I understand the problems you face on ag land uses. I do think that aggregate needs to be treated separately and differently from the other uses, which are more easily transferable and more fungible to other parts of the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Last call.
I have a letter that from Eric Sano, Washington County Farm Bureau President, and I would just turn that in.
Yes, please, and we'll put it in the record, and we'll review it before we make any changes. Thank you. Last call for anyone who hasn't yet signed up who would like to testify. Would you like to testify?
Would you like me to sign up first?
You don't need to. Well, yes, actually, we would like your name so that we have it in the record. But you can sign up after you've testified. Anyone else who I haven't called who would like to testify has been moved by the spirit of all the conversation? Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Zach Christensen. I live at 16201 Southwest Christensen Road in McMinnville, Oregon. I am the fifth generation on a farmer in my family, fourth generation on our place. I have the fifth or sixth generation, depending on how you look at it, in the lobby today, a two-and-a-half-year-old girl and a 12-week-old boy. I'm also the president of the Yamhill County Farm Bureau, a member of several different industry organizations, and I'd just like to kind of stress the importance of the fact that the farmland, high-value farmland in particular, is an extremely important factor to the Oregon economy. It is a precious resource. It is a limited resource. And when we do things that take that high-value farm ground out of production permanently, it severely impacts our ability for generations to come to make a living, to feed the world and the state and everyone else. So with that, I'd like to ask you to support the bill, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying. I would like to ask the two vice chairs to enter into the record the written testimony we have received, if you would be so kind. Do you have your list? I'll start with Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Written testimony regarding House Bill 3099 for the record is the following people: Lee Anderson, Michael Bidwell, Jim and Dory Delp, Anna Patrick Froddle, Fran Greenlee, Janet Holliday, Bob Horning, Kathy Hewitt, Harry Christrenos, Catherine Lessick, Michael Long, Jerilyn Nall, Tony Oliver, Jenny Owen, Ralph Reed, Jack Remington, Joy Ross, Christanda Sarda, Linda Serbrick, Scott Sin, Terry and Mark Weiss, and Shelley Weatherall.
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair Garrett.
Yes, Madam Chair, we have also received testimony from Joan Batten, Nancy Charlton, Molly Ellis, James Gindelsberger, Jack Hallen, Richard Holcomb, Dave Honeycutt, Larry Kelly, Wesley Catranos, Michael and Karen Lipsmeyer, Jimmy McLeod, Kevin Moynihan, Nancy Nichols, David Peter, Rosalie Pedroza, Brent Carpenter, Bruce Sahagian, Christina Scarzello, Martin Siebold, Nicole Stevens, and Pat Walter.
Thank you. Those written submissions will be included in our record for this bill. Mr. Johnson, I was hoping that you might be able to just address some of the issues that have been raised and make sure everyone has clear understanding of what's in the bill and how it works in conjunction with existing law.
Chair Nolan, for the record, Jim Johnson. I'm the Land Use and Water Planning Coordinator for the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and I'll certainly try, and I just tried to real quickly put together pencil list together, and I'm sure I'm going to probably miss something, but I'm sure that Representative Klim will remind me of something, and throw something. He's pretty good at that. So in no particular order, just through my list of notes, in relation to schools, there wasn't a lot of comment on, but the comment that was related points out that what the bill proposes to do is move schools from a use permitted outright, not subject to any review against protection of agricultural practices, to a conditional use, which would require to be reviewed against standards for protecting agriculture, and also allow for local conditions to be placed into that related to such things as traffic, parking, and the like that you can't do necessarily as a sub one use in the zone. I would also point out that what the draft bill does is also says that schools on rural land should be basically for rural populations. They shouldn't be sites for future urban schools to be sited, and that is a real hot topic in the state with farmers, especially in the northern Willamette Valley, where you see a lot of school districts looking to get cheap land in agricultural areas, and there's several of those examples in the Portland metro area. Landfills. What the bill does is, and there is a typo in this or a mistake, but what the bill does is in the permitted use section removes the provision that allows the Environmental Quality Commission to supersite landfills on farmland. There's a provision in the sub one use that basically says if the EQC orders it, then it's permitted, no other review against land use standards. Those would be removed in the bill. In the marginal land counties, is Washington and Lane counties, it should still remain as a conditional use permit. It was removed. In the rest of the state, it remains the same, and it would be a conditional use permit. So landfills are still provided for. I would assume one of the amendments that you'd want to do is make sure that deletion in the two marginal land counties for the conditional use permit would be put back into the bill. That's what I understand Representative Klim wanted in the first place when he drafted this. And so in a nutshell, the supersiding goes out, the conditional use process would still stay in. Parks.
Should I interrupt on that point or just let him finish?
Since you've already interrupted, Representative, maybe make your point.
Just, you know, like existing landfills, how are they affected?
Existing landfills would be treated as as they are currently. Basically, there's not any landfills in the state that I'm aware of that were approved by the EQC through this process. They were approved through conditional use process or predated zoning or such, so they'd go through the same process they would today unless the EQC were to supersite one, and I haven't seen it yet. So they'd go through a conditional use process for an expansion. Yeah, for expansion or for a new one.
And if they're just there,
if they're there, they predate it. They're a pre-existing. They're either a pre-existing conditional use, a pre-existing non-conforming use. There's lots of different standards there. You'd want to talk to your legal counsel on that. But it's basically would not change the status of an existing landfill.
Okay.
Parks. There was a statement made by the city of Bend that this would prohibit parks on high-value farmland. I would suggest to you that it does not list parks as being permitted on high-value farmland, but it would not preclude them by, again, going through the exceptions process. I hear an awful lot of information around when we talk about exceptions about how difficult they are to approve, and while they are more difficult than a conditional use permit, it would be interesting to see the numbers from the Department of Land Conservation and Development. There are literally tens, twenties, even hundreds of exceptions that are applied for every year, and the vast majority of them are approved statewide. And so it would be interesting to see what the numbers are on those in terms of how many exceptions are denied versus how many are approved in the state. An interesting point was made by the city. They were talking about needing land for ball fields, soccer fields, and the like. That's exactly the problem that the farming community is concerned about, and that is bringing a lot of urban people out into the middle of agriculture that they have to deal with in terms of the agricultural practices and the like. And you might want to talk to somebody at DLCD about this, but the interpretation under current state law is those types of urban-like playing field facilities are not permitted in an exclusive farm use zone under the current law. These are supposed to be parks that are more rural in character and the like, not urban playing fields and such. But you would want to talk to somebody more about that at DLCD. Also during that discussion, it was talked about how high-value farmland soils in eastern Oregon or other parts are dealt with primarily on the basis of irrigation. That is not true. The definition of high-value farmland is soils-based, and it's a predominance test based on how much of those soils are within the subject tract. So you could have a 100-acre tract with 45 acres of high-value soils on it, but the whole tract would not be high-value farmland because it's predominantly composed of non-high-value soils. Where irrigation comes into play is that when you look at a soil survey, some soils, when irrigated, actually change their capability for agriculture and thus can become high value. But if the soil doesn't have that capability in the first place, you put soil on rock, it doesn't, or you put irrigation on rock, it doesn't make it high value farmland. You put irrigation on a class 3 soil that is class 3 because it drains so fast, but you get the water on it now, and it now may become high value because that water basically deals with a capability issue related to agriculture. So irrigation by itself does not make land high value farmland. Lastly, aggregate. I've heard an awful lot of discussion in this about aggregate and the way that this bill is written, that it would require an exception. The way that the law, the way that the bill is drafted is it does not require an exception, and it's not an outright prohibition. It actually says that aggregate could not be sited on the soils listed in the bill unless there is a reasonable demonstration that it cannot be accommodated on other soils and other zoning. That is not the exceptions process. That is a small portion of what the exceptions process is, and in fact, it's actually easier than the exceptions process because you're only looking at the alternatives portion of the exceptions process. The exceptions process also involves some needs analyses and other things and the such. So this bill would actually be kind of a lesser version of the exceptions process, and it's really an alternatives process that says if you can't find an alternative, then you can come back to those soils. So it's not an outright prohibition. So those were the issues that I saw in kind of some of the issues as it relates back to agriculture.
Thank you. Representative Clymore, anyone else have questions of Mr. Johnson? Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You concurred with the assessment of what we need to do to deal with the poor greyhound kennels and discriminatory language against them and other kennels?
Chair Nolan, Representative Clem, yes, I do. I saw that early on, and I was wondering if there was something I was not reading in it. You know, maybe the lawyers had come up with something I hadn't thought of. So I would agree with that, yes.
Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. As I mentioned, Representative Clem is going to try to pull together a work group, see if we can come up with an amendment to this bill that makes more sense, improves it, before we send it on its way. If you can accommodate it, Representative Espel, I would really appreciate your input on that as well.
I gave Representative Clem my schedule of when I'd be available.
Excellent. Thank you. And other members of the committee who are interested in working on that, I'd welcome you as well. Members of the public, we have your testimony. If there is other specific written suggestions you would like to make, Ms. Ross is the right place for you to direct them. Thank you. Close the public hearing. We're adjourned.